Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We will have Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up for his weekly visit at 8 o'clock. We will get his thoughts on the Titans and their win, baby, against the Arizona Cardinals. Titans win. They improved to 1-4 on the season. Just an all-time giveaway by the Arizona Cardinals in that game. But you know what? If you're a Titans fan, you'll take it. You'll take a little bit of luck going your way this time around. Taking your thoughts on the Titans win, 615-737-1025. Joe, a couple things in addition to Cam Ward that I want to get to that continue to stand out to me. This is now two games in a row, and it wasn't perfect, and you brought up somebody earlier in the show that I still continue to have pretty big concerns about in the Mandor, Dan Moore. But I will say, you know, I expected them to walk into Houston last week, Joe, and for Cam Ward to just be totally under duress the whole game. And that did not happen. Now, they only scored 0 points in the game last week, so it didn't pay off very well for the Titans offense. But at least, like, Cam Ward wasn't back there just getting rocked on a snap-by-snap basis. I mean, yesterday, Arizona had 2 sacks and 4 quarterback hits. Josh Sweat had both sacks by the Cardinals. And then other than that, like, and Adam Archuleta pointed this out a lot on the broadcast too, like, it was pretty clean in the pocket for Cam Ward yesterday. It wasn't perfect, but pretty clean for the most part throughout the game, which I thought was an encouraging sign, Joe. 2 games in a row where the protection has been decent for Cam Ward back there, which has been an upgrade.
I was surprised for sure. And overall, he definitely had. I feel like there were still some. In fact, I think some of the rougher moments where he's kind of running around, I thought he kind of did it to himself a couple times, you know, where it was like, yeah, you had more time than you thought, you know, but the feet can be a little happy sometimes. And as you mentioned, Mandor blew open a couple times.
Yeah, it did. You know,
the wind whoosh, and there's a quarterback in there again. Easy for me, but still, yeah, it seems to be improving. The pass rush coming inside doesn't seem to be happening a lot, which is a huge thing, you know. And even like right tackle, which I think is going to be upgraded significantly. Well, if you're the Titans, you hope significantly with Latham returning. But I think just all the tea leaves and then what Brian Callahan said late last week would suggest that he was very close to playing this week, so he should be back next week. So, yeah, that part of it actually is not terrible.
I'll tell you one thing that is bad. Here's my other takeaway. Oladejo's bad, man. Yeah, it's not good. And you know, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time today in the aftermath of a Titans win talking about it, but I thought he was pretty rough yesterday. And it's one thing to just not get after the passer, which is basically what he's been all year, just invisible on that front. But I thought there were some bad angles yesterday. They pointed out, you know, Archuleta pointed out on the broadcast, you know, he was responsible for the spy on Murray one time and just totally started running the other way, and Murray got around the edge on him. Like, it was not very good from Oladejo yesterday.
Yeah, well, you noticed him more than I did then. Good for you, because I think that's the thing. I think you have to, glaring mistakes aside, he's just a body, you know, when he's out there, he's just a body. And, so that's discouraging. And again, it's like project fine, understandable. You definitely want to see, first of all, by year two, like that's got to be a difference making starter. Like projects in this league aren't multi-year things, right?
Yeah.
Like by year two, you got to be like, as a second round pick where he went, you got to be like a good starter. And this year you got to show something. Like, you got to progress. If you have the tools they believe you have, and you know, you're a project. Well, then all you're doing is trying to work on this craft, you know, day after day. And so there should be progress made. Doesn't look like there is any right now. I mean, that's an important thing for the rest of the year, regardless of everything else, is that you see something from him. You see some hope that it's not just going to be a complete second round zero pick.
And here's the other thing. Chim Dike in the return game is a weapon. Like he may house a couple this year at some point if it keeps going this way. Like, you know, he got one called back on the punt return a few games ago, but like, you know, a 65-yard kick return yesterday that was a big play in the game. Like, you know, I understand the kickoff in particular right now is set up for more of this, and kickoffs around the league, as we discussed a couple weeks ago. I mean, they're returning as many of them as they can at this point, which is good to see the kickoff be an actual play again. But it's also good to see the kickoff be an actual play and the Titans maybe being able to take advantage of the kickoff being an actual play. That would be that is it's been a long time since we've been able to say that.
Yeah, I mean, if you can figure out Joey Sly, then the overall kicking game is awfully good. I get Joey Sly, game winning field goal kicker from yesterday. So I mean you know, what about two yards further back and he misses?
Three? Yeah, pretty close.
Something like that. But no question. DK is a weapon. The overall picture of the special teams with Bones Fossil is absolutely a better. And yeah, you watch him and you think like, man, can they, you know, is there a future where they can get him a little bit more involved and use that speed on offense more?
Right.
And I know they've done some stuff, and they're in, you know, certainly he's a sweep guy and he's been able to have a few opportunities downfield, but that just seems like something that you want to try to cultivate moving forward.
Yeah. And I think Ward had him on one.
They
yesterday
took one shot yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. It just, they would be nice to dial that one in for sure, because I think he can be a weapon back there. So Joe, you know, obviously we've spent so much time this year talking about Brian Callahan, and you know, some people have said today that, well, now they're going to keep Brian Callahan the whole year. I mean, we'll see. There's a lot of football left to be played. And look, I think it was great for the Titans to get a win. As I said to begin the show, if you're a Titans fan, I hope you enjoy it, because you deserve to enjoy an NFL Sunday and Monday when your team won a football game. It's been a while, so I hope that's the route that most Titans fans take. I still think, like, if you're Brinker and Borgonzi and you're looking at this, like, you know how you won the game yesterday. It had a lot more to do with Arizona just totally screwing it up than it did you winning the game. And they're aware of that. Now, you know, At this point, I don't know that Brian Callahan wasn't going to get the whole year anyway. I don't think that yesterday's game changes the overall picture of Brian Callahan all that much. I will say, like, it was, as somebody who, as you know, Joe, has been very critical of Brian Callahan and thinks that the Titans need to get rid of him, it was nice to see the Titans get a win yesterday. I felt good for everybody involved because, frankly, it had gotten to the point where you just basically started to feel bad for everybody involved with how bad it was going.
Yeah, like, how often you talk about, like, you know, not being able to turn away from, like, a car accident or whatever, but, like, how much can you watch it over and over again, you know? And it's gotten uncomfortable around here. So I don't think this really changes much of what's going to come whenever it comes. I don't think this is going to be some for the team, for the coaching staff, going to be some huge thing. That'd be shocking if it turned out that way. To me, again, what you hope is that this is a thing for the rookie QB, and that moves them forward. But again, like, look, these guys, their job is to develop him. Their job is to get the most out of him and have him progress through this year, whether they're going to be here next year or not. We don't think they will be. So, you know, can they build on this in that way too? Second day. I mean, again, all these things were going to be, wow, is this a new low? Like, it was going to be like, is this a new low? Yeah, they had the 6 points, so they didn't miss those field goals in the first half that they missed at Houston, but is this actually the worst performance of the Titans? Like, it was trending that way for 48 minutes of football. So you got to keep that in mind. But they made plays. They took advantage of an all-time choke job. And so, I don't think it's going to mean much to the whole, to the big picture. But the biggest picture is Cam Ward, right? So what does this do for him?
Well, it's also kind of, speaking of coaches, like if the Cardinals just totally spiral from here, or like let's say they're like halfway decent the rest of the year, but they miss out on the playoffs by like a game or two, and you look back at that game and like Jonathan Gannon ends up getting fired for all this. Can you imagine like the damage that that loss to the Titans could do to the Cardinals?
No, I mean it's. I actually have, I've thought. I thought. I think I said it going the year. I thought that they might be a little bit of a surprise team. I think they're pretty good, you know. And you know, again, like when they had James Conner, you know, like that. That's a he's a very good football player. And yeah, I don't know what's up with Marvin Harrison Jr. Like you were saying earlier, I thought he was on his way to about a 250-yard game, but he still had 98 in the game. But that could be, yeah, that could be absolutely devastating for them. Like the Cardinals are one of those franchises that has a lot of losses that are like, you know, like they're like the Lions and
Oh
the
yeah.
Browns. You know, they're one of the bad franchises. This one though, like this one's got to be like at the top of the list.
It's
Like this
pretty
one will be
incredible.
remembered.
Oh yeah. If you were in that stadium yesterday, you'll remember that one for a long time. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Some more Titans thoughts to get to coming up next. We will get into Vanderbilt's loss at Alabama later this hour. As well, the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up at 7:45. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game. DVD with Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circa Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall today prior to the Monday Night Football game. Head up there to watch the Chiefs take on the Jaguars, plus ask about Circa's giveaway of a trip to the Las Vegas for the Titans-Raiders game. Which, by the way, is next week. So make sure you ask about that very quickly. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Joe, we mentioned Ridley. 5 catches for 131 yards yesterday on 10 targets. A couple of routes, Joe, where I looked at it and I was like, you know, he's coming in and out of the break with a quickness, with a purpose. He had an out route that he caught on the sideline. It wasn't a big play or anything, but, I mean, he was just full dead sprint. And then cuts out to the left. Ward hits him on the sideline over there perfectly. I just thought Ridley looked like the Calvin Ridley that we have grown accustomed to expecting yesterday, and what we thought we were going to see heading into the season based on the connection between Ward and Ridley throughout camp and throughout the preseason. So positive signs for the Titans yesterday. I think that's probably where you start, is Calvin Ridley and the way that he looked. 5 catches, 131 yards.
Yeah, no, very much needed without question. I said it earlier, but it's like immediately my thoughts turned to, okay, people out there who might need a number two receiver. Who would that be, by the way? What team out there might be
Buffalo.
looking at Calvin Ridley? Buffalo? Oh, okay. Yeah. Actually not a bad thought at all. Buffalo losing to Vrabes and the Pats last night at home. That's a stunner. But no, the Titans, whatever happens with Ridley, you know, it really is an interesting question, right? It's like you want Cam Ward to develop and be the best he can possibly be this year. So why would you take away someone who actually can manipulate a defense, who actually can demand extra coverage and can make explosive plays both, you know, downfield and with the ball in his hands? For what? What do you get back for him?
Fourth, maybe.
Yeah, see, for a fourth, I'm just not doing it. I think I'm going to keep him for Cam Ward. But until or unless that happens or doesn't happen or whatever, very much needed for the Titans for him to emerge. And you know, I think there's a lot of talk sometimes. People are struggling like the Titans have. It's like, oh, they're fighting. They're resilient. You know, they keep working, all this stuff. People have been pretty adamant about that with Ridley, you know, to the point where I think you have to believe it, you know. And I think this is an example of obviously things haven't always worked out. And how many times has he not made plays because the quarterback missed him or missed a read or couldn't get to the read or whatever? I'm sure that there's been some plays out there that aren't on him that have been left on the field, but there are plenty that were on him too. And he just has been struggling. So that's a big development. Another guy like that, Robbie, that we haven't talked about yet, but I find this really interesting. There were, I think Callahan and other players were saying the biggest play of the game was L'Jarius Sneed, you know, chasing down DeMarcado, you know, before he fumbled. I don't know that I buy that. I mean, good for him for like running fast.
He didn't touch the ball, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, did he influence him? I don't
know. No, he didn't even know, like, he's behind him. Clearly.
Yeah, that's. So it's like, I guess, you know, in the moment, you know, whatever, you're Callahan on the sideline, the play happened, you're on to the next play, you're coaching the game, and maybe you never, but like, that was something he said in his post game, you know, was like how huge of a play that was.
I'm Simmons
like,
did too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Simmons or Chig said like it was like the biggest play of the game. It's like, there is no way that was not the biggest play of the game. I don't think it was a play.
I mean, it's
good for him. He ran. Yeah. You know.
It's a good thought. I mean, the effort was good. I mean, look, you could. It's noticeable when you watch it because, I mean, he is running his butt off back there. Like, he's trying to get to him. But, I mean, again, if the guy just holds on to the freaking football going into the end zone, it's hey, good effort, L'Jarius, but didn't quite get to him on that play.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but it didn't even seem like he even realized that was. And the thing is, if he did realize he was coming, isn't that when you rip the ball and say, okay, I'm not messing around then?
Yeah, if he did realize it, he was even more of an idiot for not holding onto the ball coming into the end zone.
Yeah, so, but people are, you know, with Ridley, it's like production's there. Good for him, no question. That was a big moment. With Sneed, it's like people are desperate to see something from 38 that isn't just, you know, subpar at this point.
Looked at DeMarcado when he was going to the end zone and said, who are you? Who? Who's that?
What's that in your hand?
What's that? Is that? Did you drop
That's
the ball?
That's a what?
Oh, okay. How about that? Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in George in the borough. George, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Gentlemen, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I called in last week and talked about how this team basically can win only about one of three ways. The other team has a fourth-string quarterback, the other team's hands are tied behind their back, or the other team pukes away the game. Arizona puked that game away. That's one of the most unbelievable collapses I've ever seen from an NFL team. That yesterday, that's the only way the Titans can win games is what happened yesterday. I still think Cam needs a lot of work, and he needs more help from his receiving corps. Remember in the offseason, Cam, I think he said he could potentially have a top five receiving corps, whatever nonsense he spouted. Dude, you got horse crap for a receiving corps. And at the end of the day, he still is a moron for a coach. He's got a moron offensive coordinator who I guess can't call plays because they skipped over him for the quarterback coach. He has a stooge running the football operations in Chad Brinker, who's done nothing productive to help the Tennessee Titans since he arrived. The CEO, Bert Nyhill, thought Callahan and Carthon were great hires. Actually, they were very bad hires, just like I think Bert Nyhill is a very bad hire. Hey, look, I appreciate a win, but I want to keep things real and honest. This team still blows, and yesterday proved the only way the Titans can win a game is the other team throws up all over themselves and hands the Titans a free win. Gentlemen, I love your show, but that's all I've got today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, George. Appreciate it. Joe, took about an hour and a half, but we're back into a little bit of normalcy there with that call.
It was a nice brief
escape for a while. Reveling
George,
the Titans win.
This is a victory Monday, George. I will not have this kind of slander thrown the Titans way. I see resilience. I see relentlessness. I see a big dub.
I mean, I was really kind of hoping.
He's mostly right.
He's mostly right. I was kind of hoping that Callahan would walk into the press conference yesterday and look at Kuharski and be like, hey, what do you think about that, buddy? You want to do a story on any of our slogans on the wall now, buddy? What do you think about that?
Hey, come here, Paul. See that? That says exit. Get your ass out of my press conference. You're out.
If we could only be so lucky.
Joe, another game where Jeffrey Simmons was just all over the place. I mean, he had a sack and a half. He got credited with 8 tackles, 6 of them solo, 2 quarterback hits on the game. He was in the backfield a lot, wreaking havoc. And look, Herndon said this, and I mean, I'm not going to sit here and act like I've watched every defensive tackle in the league so far this year. It would be hard for me to imagine very many of them playing at a higher level than what Jeffrey Simmons is right now. Herndon said he's the best DT in the NFL right now through 5 weeks, and that was on full display again yesterday against Arizona. He was dominant in that game.
Absolutely. I mean, this is like if I were still, I'd be like, told you in the preseason, he's going to be great. But I wouldn't do that. See, I just use rip on Stilley to actually, you know, basically tell everybody that I told you so. But no, I mean, look, the guy, look, obviously, the losing the weight was a big thing for him, and it doesn't appear to have cost him any of his power at all. And I think that's, I did not think we'd be talking at any point in Simmons the rest of his career, you know, which I think the best of his career was in 2021, about him possibly being that level of player, like talking about him legitimately being the top DT. But I mean, I can't argue with Herndon at this point. And it's really interesting, Robbie, because even though we may think it's a foregone conclusion with Brian Callahan and this coaching staff, they're fighting for it, right? I mean, they're fighting for their jobs. If they beat the Raiders, all of a sudden, which is absolutely on the table, Brock Bowers is hurt. The Raiders are terrible. You know, if they beat the Raiders, we will be sitting in mid-October. They will be 2-4.
Correct.
And you're 2 weeks from the trading deadline, you know, and it's like if you're this coaching staff, if the front office moves Jeff Simmons, which is the sensible thing to do if you get, certainly if you get a first rounder, but like think about how absolutely incapable of looking like an NFL defense your defense will be.
It will be bad.
You will not come close to winning another game. Like, and I'm not saying Jeff Simmons is winning games single-handedly, but like seriously, take 98 out of that defense, which already has so many issues with him on the field, and tell me how bad it'll be.
It will be very bad.
So if you're this coaching staff, it's like you're not just fight, like, you know, trying to like show you can develop Cam Ward and fight to the end of the year. Like if you get gutted at the trading deadline, then like isn't that basically saying thanks, guys, do your job the rest of the year, and good luck finding jobs next year?
Yeah, that would be what that is saying. I don't think there's any doubt about that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Corey Curtis coming up at 8 o'clock from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the 22-21 win for the Tennessee Titans yesterday. Joe, a big game over the weekend. Vanderbilt heading down to Tuscaloosa, and it did not end well for the Doors. We will get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. The MTSU Blue Raiders taking on Missouri State this Wednesday at 6:30. Catch all the action on Totally Hits 93.3, with coverage also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at TotallyHitsNashville.com. We have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up at 7:45. Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us at 8 o'clock. Talking all things Titans, we'll get into the Titans 22-21 win against Arizona with Corey. Joe, a big game in college football this weekend. Vanderbilt heads down to Tuscaloosa, and it does not go well for the Doors. They lose 30-14 in what was a very competitive game for a while, and then Alabama broke it open again late in the game. Ty Simpson, 23 of 31, 340 yards, 2 touchdown passes, and a pick. And Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt offense, Joe, struck very quickly in that game, and you thought, oh, boy. I mean, Cedric Alexander just broke off a 65-yard touchdown run. Here comes Vanderbilt again heading into Tuscaloosa, and they're going to shock Alabama again for the second year in a row. But some crucial mistakes by Pavia in the game. A couple of turnovers in the red zone, including a fumble, and then an interception in the second half, and that was just too much for Vanderbilt to overcome. And they lose 30-14 to Alabama. Joe, you were there. So what did you make of the game between Vanderbilt and Alabama?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, my prevailing memory of that game will be standing on the sideline right behind Johnny Manziel as Alabama fans behind me are just screaming some of the most awful stuff. And he keeps turning around, flipping them off, grabbing certain body parts, inviting them to do certain things to certain body parts, striking the Heisman pose. Jeez. And it's just like, good God, man. Yeah, he's on the Vanderbilt sideline in the Pavia jersey. Did you see, by the way, the Bama fan screaming at Pavia video?
Oh, yeah.
Good God. So some of these people, it's like if you are a grown-ass man and you're going to be that much of a loser in public, maybe you should, like, have a couple fewer drinks than you did
Stay
on
that
home. Particular day. Yeah, but I'm not, you know, Bama fans listening, I can't sit here and pretend, because I haven't really, you don't always have the experience in every stadium or whatever. It depends on, like, where they have you stand late in games and stuff. But I have, between this game and then the Tennessee game 2 years ago, the drunken foul, and a lot of it is students, I think, just horrible stuff, screamed. I really have not heard it anywhere worse than in that stadium. I mean, it's crazy. But anyway, the game itself, there's my little PSA. Calm it down, drink a little less, swear a little less, Alabama people. Yeah, Pavia, you know, the fumble, that's a great play by Jefferson for Alabama. I mean, he hit Pavia about four or five times Saturday where it's like, my goodness, he is teeing off on him for all the talk. And it was a great play to rip it out. You know, that's he wasn't going to make the first down, so it was going to be 10-0 Vanderbilt. That's significant. But I think also huge, maybe the biggest moment of the day, Robbie, was Vanderbilt comes down late in the second, and they put together a really nice drive. Really some great stuff from Tim Beck. And you got a little, you know, a little play action, then you shovel it. You go in left play action, you shovel it the other way, get Alexander in the end zone, go up 14-7. And Bama comes right down and ties it.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom. Simpson with some terrific throws. You know, Jeremy Bernard is, we talk about Ryan Williams, but he's a pro too. They have two pro receivers. And Simpson, to me, was just, I think he was the best player on the field overall. He made some mistakes. He took some sacks you can't take. He almost had the fumble that was taken back all the way, but those calls were right. I mean, those to me, clearly, those calls were right. The two fumbles that both they went Bama's way, and then Pavia with the pick. I mean, you're about to go up 21-20 in the fourth quarter and put all that pressure on Alabama. Like we talked about last week, what happens if you're in the fourth and it's a one possession game, or even, you know, Bama's trailing? How do they respond? And we'll never know, because he just didn't see. I mean, he had to have been wrong on the coverage. He just didn't see Keon Sabb, who was, I don't know if he was like the robber on that player, but Pavia just blew the coverage. He immediately went to the sideline and they were pointing it out, and he was just like, oh, you know, it was a misread. It was a huge mistake. And then from there, Vanderbilt's defense was exhausted and they just ran the ball on them. And it was, but let me look, I guess I'm interested to hear from Vanderbilt fans, because I still, if I'm a Vanderbilt fan, yes, it's disappointing. And now the margin for error is very slim. You're talking about the playoff, but I'm not like devastated by like what I saw from my team. I'm confident in this team moving forward that it has some wins in it left. And that, and again, look at everything else. Again, the Texas game that I thought was going to be, oh, forget that one.
They suck.
Never mind. They're bad. So like, it's a tough loss, and it's tough that your Pavia is the guy who he just didn't come up big enough. You know, he didn't come up with the star performance you needed. I still would feel pretty good about things as a Vanderbilt fan right now.
I think the script like almost totally flipped on Vanderbilt from what happened last year. I mean, number one, the time of possession. I mean, it was almost 38-22 for Bama in that game. And they were talking about this on the broadcast too, you know, late in the fourth quarter. What did Alabama run against Vanderbilt last year? Went in like 45 plays or something ridiculous like that. Like late in the game, I think Vanderbilt was at like 40. So, I mean, the script almost totally flipped on them from what they did to Alabama a year ago. I'm with you. Like, you know, Vanderbilt made some plays in the game. I think if you're a Vanderbilt fan, the thing you look at that can hurt the most but also probably is the most encouraging is there were plays out there left to be made that you just left on the field that had you made one or two of them, maybe the game goes differently and it flips on you a little bit. So, I'm with you. Like, I don't look at that Vanderbilt loss and think, well, it was a good story, but they're just done now. Like, I think they're going to have a chance against LSU. I mean, I think they're going to have a, I mean, certainly, like, if Arch Manning can't complete a forward pass, like it seems like he's unable to right now, they're going to have a chance against Texas, even though it's on the road. Like, they're going to have a chance in that game. So, by no means is their season done, or do I think that they're just totally screwed now. But I will say, like, Pavia, you know, usually Pavia backs up what he says, and, you know, he's kind of directly responsible for two of the big moments in the game, in that game Saturday. Not what you were looking for from him on Saturday.
Yeah. No doubt. Like, you know, those are the moments. Talk the talk, didn't walk the walk, did take, you know, took the blame after. So, you know, and I that's not surprising to me. He's definitely not like a talker who then like shuns responsibility. So he put it on himself, and he was right. Like that, I'd love to see that game play out from there, because they were scoring, man. Like they were moving. They had first down at like the 13, and it was just like, you know, there. So at worst, I guess, you know, obviously Bama could have stopped them, and it would have been 20-17 Bama. I mean, even that, you know, you get it down to a field goal, and it's just, you'd love to see, maybe Bama just does the same thing. They just have Vanderbilt's defense tired, and they run the football. Jam Miller is a good player. But again, I also, you know, think about just what we thought a month ago with some of these teams, like the disaster of Kalen DeBoer, you know, and how he is just, it is ugly. And now it's like, okay. I mean, I don't think their defense is great. You know, it's still talented, has flaws. I think Ty Simpson should be, he can extend. That's the thing. He did some Pavia stuff with extending plays.
No, he's good.
And keeping his eyes downfield and ripping some passes. And, he's not, I don't know. I don't know, like, how quickly things could develop in terms of, like, him being an NFL prospect. But I definitely, at times, some of his throws, you're like, this kid's got, like, the whole package. He's athletic. He moves around. He seems to process really fast, and he can rip it. So all of a sudden it's like, oh, so maybe Bama could be the best team in the SEC. Is that possible? I mean, I think there's about probably four or five teams right now that could claim that.
Yeah, I think so too. And they look good. And again, to your point, they're not without flaw, but they're playing good football now after what was just a disaster of a loss for them to start off the season. I mean, it's an interesting weekend in college football. I mean, you had the Miami-Florida State game with Miami continuing to look impressive. You had Penn freaking State losing to UCLA.
And Nico
Iamaleava looking great out there in that game. You had the Neuheisel's kid out there who apparently took over play calling duties like 2 days before it happened, getting carried off the field like a war hero. Like, it was unbelievable what happened at the Rose Bowl over the weekend.
I know, it looked like because he has that floppy hair. I'm like, is that like a 12-year-old they're throwing around? Like, who is that? And like it's like the ball boy. Yeah, we love you, man. I mean, I tell you what, no, you know, the whole James Franklin thing, it's always, you know, big game James, and, you know, they handle their business otherwise. And they're now, I mean, Texas and Penn State both. I picked Penn State to win it all, by the way, so I'm a really good prognosticator of college football. Yeah, let me raise my hand on that. Boy, all of a sudden, like, he probably just needs to get the heck out of there. Like, just with one game. But it's years in the building of sort of like, okay, it's really good, but it's not good enough. You want to compete for championships. You lose that game. I mean, with what's supposed to be his best team, with after he stole Ohio State's defensive coordinator, paid him $3 million, for that guy to come out and make Nico look like a Heisman winner.
Yeah.
It goes from 0 to 1,000 like that for James Franklin and Penn State.
I would love to know the odds you could have gotten over the weekend if you picked a Penn State loss, so UCLA win and a Titans win at the same time. If you're that combo Titans UCLA Bruins fan, you could have made a whole lot of money this weekend.
Imagine that parlay. Oh boy. Unbelievable.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. Corey Curtis at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
We had a love fest. We all kind of gathered around. We hugged each other.
Cut their jugular and eat their spleen.
What do you think about that, buddy?
You think the darkness is your ally? I was born in it.
I would be teaching them to go Forrest Gump. Just keep running all the way through the end zone into, like, the exit to the stadium.
He must be the stupidest son of a liar, but he sure is fast.
Hey, come here, Paul. See that? That says exit. Get your ass out of my press conference.
Would you call this cutting someone's jugular, Mike?
1 week we're going to stink, and this guy sucks, and then I suck.
It is time for the Rex Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Anytime we can work Forrest Gump in, I'm good with it. What a movie that is. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours.
It's an amazing movie. However, Best Picture 1994 should have been Pulp Fiction, not Forrest Gump, but that's a debate for another day. They're both great. You know, Ian, along with those amazing intros, like, he must be a mind reader, because he's even added another log onto the fire of this rant. So I'm going to read. Ian sent us this this tweet from Ross Martin, who covers North Carolina. It says, quote, according to sources inside the North Carolina football program, it's a directive from the staff, Bill Belichick, to not tweet/retweet anything Patriots related. That's clearly why UNC football has not posted anything from Drake May's electric primetime win over the Buffalo Bills, end quote. I think that's a pretty good way to sum up just the absolute insanity of how Bill Belichick is savaging his legacy. He is a joke. He is a joke. And it's in there's, and I'm not even talking. I'll take the ring around the rosy pocket full of posies. Take that aside. Okay. I mean, it is part of it, but you don't even need that anymore. The whole pettiness of, like, not mentioning Robert Kraft in his book, this whole, we're not, they don't welcome me, so I don't welcome them. And Vrabel's like, yeah, you can come. You can come whenever you want, Bill. They just had him up for a ceremony. And he's this pathetic. But you know what's worse is North Carolina football. They've played four Power Four opponents. They have been outscored 120-33. That's an average of 40-8. And it's not like they're playing Ohio State here, guys. They're playing a bad Clemson team that has its own embattled coach, and they lost 38-10 Saturday. And it truly is incredible to see how he and his people have completely bungled this entire situation. Michael Lombardi, who is ready to just – he's ready to call out any media guy who questions Belichick at any turn. The brilliant GM of North Carolina football. He sent a letter to supporters. And this is from Football Scoop, published this letter, saying all the roster issues, saying, hey, we're about to sign 40 high school recruits this winter. Okay. That's double the process. Here's the things he mentioned. He mentioned the Sixers, the trust the process long build, okay? He talked about Mac Brown going 2-20 in 1988 and 1989. He talked about, like, Lou Holtz's first year at Notre Dame in the 80s, like 1984, or Kirk Ferentz at Iowa when they went like 1-10 in 1998 or 99, whatever it was. These are the examples. And then Belichick struggles early. These are the examples cited. Have these guys noticed what sport they're in or how it works anymore? I mean, they have a terrible team. For example, they let two guys after spring, okay, Bo Atkinson, D lineman, who would be their best defensive player, left for Ohio State. Linebacker Amari Campbell, probably their second best defensive player, left for Penn State. They let all these guys leave. They signed a bunch of guys who are terrible. Clearly terrible. And I'm going to read this quote. David Ubbin wrote about Belichick, but I'm going to read this quote from this is a group of five coach, okay? And what he actually said over the summer, we did a story about like North Carolina, like are they getting good players? It was like, boy, it looks like they're kind of building a bad team. We had no idea it was this bad. Here's the quote from this coach, okay, who's anonymous, but he says, quote, did they understand they're in the ACC and not like Conference USA or the Sun Belt? Like, we got beat by North Carolina on a bunch of kids. I was like, why the F is North Carolina beating us on kids? Like, you know, when I run into power fours over and over again in recruiting, I'm like, oh, okay, well, they're going to suck, end quote. Like, he has no clue what he's doing. He's driving that football program into the ground, asking people for patience like it's freaking 1997. I just quit and go live on an island and stop being a part of football in any way, please. This is more embarrassing and more awful than I ever could have imagined. And I know that sometimes things start badly and they turn around and all that stuff. This is not going to turn around. This is terrible, and it's insane that someone that smart and that accomplished and all those guys could come in and butcher something this badly. It is truly, for all the things we just talked about, James Franklin and Penn State, and look at Arch Manning in Texas, and there's all kinds of stuff. There is nothing like Bill Belichick and North Carolina and the disaster that he has turned it into with a snap of a finger.
The more time that goes on, the more patience I have for the, oh, my God, Tom Brady had to overcome Bill Belichick discussion. Like, that's how bad it is. Like, I used to laugh at that and be like, okay, guys. Now I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe he did. Maybe he did have to overcome some Bill Belichick. Because the thing that I can't get over is for how long everybody viewed Belichick as just like this super genius out there. And how dumb he is now. Like, those two things just don't add up to me. Like, and I understand he's gotten older, but my goodness, like, he just looks like he's totally incompetent in everything he's trying to do out there, right? It's crazy to me.
And by the way, the North, yeah, it is. I still have to think it's like he can't have.
He's like a control freak, kind of, right?
Taylor.
Does it feel like a control freak?
He's a total control freak, yeah.
At this point, right? Like, too much.
So are a lot of college football coaches. That's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, like, Saban's a control freak, right? I mean, it's just amazing, the stupidity, you know? Like, you can be a jerk, you can be... there's some programs out there that don't let anybody have any access to them, things like that. And I still have to think that he, like, was really good. I mean, like, again, like, they had those teams that really weren't, like, just totally dependent on Brady. They did eventually get to the point where they were totally dependent on Brady. But I don't know what's happened. It's truly amazing. And the North Carolina AD wanted no part of this, by the way. This was a board of trustee, powerful booster power move to make this happen, when the North Carolina AD wanted to hire, like, you know, like an up and coming good young coach, which is what you should do if you want to win in college football. And man,
it's going
well. I mean, the only thing worse than this is if like the two boosters at Arkansas who are like best friends with Bobby Petrino somehow ram him in as head coach, you know, like that would actually take a little heat off Belichick, you know, if that happens. But my goodness, man, he is. It's truly incredible. Texter says, makes me think the cheating helped a lot. Yeah, well, they did cut some corners too, man. They did. The whole league was like, wow, those guys try to do anything they can to get an edge. So maybe that's something that's part of it too. But, you know, people cheat in college football too. Figure that out, Bill. Cheat somehow. Yeah, I don't know how. Go find Connor Stallions. My God, do something.
Corey Curtis from News 2 will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the 22-21 win for the Titans against the Arizona Cardinals. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.